Spare Ideas is a podcast about ideas. All ideas contained within this podcast are the property of Spare Ideas Corporation and its subsidiaries. On hearing this disclaimer, you agree to not steal, imitate, interpret, initiate, imbibe, or otherwise profit from said ideas, even though none of this is legally binding. In fact, please steal these ideas. They're going spare.
Got them, we'll have them.
Spare ideas.
We'll take them apart and put them back together again.
Hello and welcome to Spare Ideas, a podcast about inventing inventions. I'm Ben Addicott.
I'm Sarah Rees.
And I'm Rowan Hopkins.
That's very true. And what brings us here today, Sarah Rees and Rowan Hopkins?
The chase for more ideas and inventions.
We need more.
The lust.
Yeah. I see. And how do we go about getting them?
Well, I got a taxi here.
That's how you get the chase.
Yeah.
It's a long-standing tradition of chasing people in taxis.
Yeah, it is.
Follow that car.
Exactly. Yeah. But I was like, case. Follow that house that's not moving anywhere. And I'm going to give you directions.
Find me an idea. That would be a harsh direction to give to any kind of cab driver. Even an Uber driver who are quite up to date, they still wouldn't necessarily know what to do with that information.
I feel like my taxi driver, Jeff, I think he'd be... He's quite into apps, so he would probably just take me to his house and pitch me.
Oh, well, there we go. Which maybe we should get...
invite him on.
We should. Yeah, maybe we'll get Jeff, the taxi driver, on.
Come on, Jeff.
Or possibly just book him to come and pick you up. And then when he's here, be like, oh, Jeff, do you want to sit down for a second?
And just pop in and do an hour-long podcast.
Accidentally do a podcast. Yeah. That would run very high on the meter, I think.
It would. And he does me a deal, but I think still.
The full hour. I mean, you're not driving anywhere.
This is true. Mm.
I mean, what I was trying to do here was prompt you to explain what the show is, but we've gone down some interesting routes instead. That's fine. Yeah, I'm going to prompt Sarah now. Sarah, what do we do on this show?
On this show, we invite a carefully selected guest, which I may have said last week, but I've said it again anyway, because it's still true.
If you say it consistently, it sounds like official spiel, so try and find some consistency.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's 2 weeks running, I think, probably. Yes, to come along and share with us their inventions.
I see. And what do they do? What do we do when they share those inventions?
We receive them.
Mm-hmm.
Do we critique them?
I suppose so. I suppose we try.
We discuss them.
We try and
we
find
collaborate
the,
on them.
We try and make them work. I guess really.
Yeah.
The thing. Yeah. Exactly.
We're not about knocking down.
No. Exactly. We're building up.
No. Yeah.
It's about trying to see the good, see the bad, take the both. Then you have the facts of life.
Mm-hmm. It can be difficult.
It can.
We've had some hard ones to really see how they could.
Well, this is my hope today. I think we may, because we have somebody here who's actually probably the most experienced inventor we've had so far in terms of ideas and inventions.
Yeah.
It might be that this is the time we actually receive some bona fide. I mean, we'll see. Should we introduce our guest today then?
We shall. So our guest today is Rob Hopkins, who also happens to be my dad.
Yeah, no, let's not try and hide that fact.
I think let's just get out in the open at this
full
point.
Disclosure.
Full disclosure, everyone knows.
Yeah. We could have done the whole shtick where I'm like, oh, any relation? And you're like, yes, you know that. You've met him.
Yes. So he's here.
Hello.
Today.
Hello, Rob.
Hello.
Thank you for having me on.
Oh, you're very welcome. And we're very welcome as well. Everyone's welcome.
Yeah, we're very welcoming.
Go on, you do this. Yeah. It's only fair.
Do you have a history of inventing inventions?
I don't know about inventions. I guess I invent ideas.
Spare ideas. That works perfectly. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm one of the people who started the Transition Town movement, which was an idea and is now in 50 countries and thousands of communities. That was kind of an idea.
I think it's safe to say
that went well then.
So that was an idea. So anyway, so I'm here today with three ideas, which if at least two of them don't make us all millionaires, I'll be shocked and depressed, frankly.
Are they at the same calibre as the Transition Town movement?
Maybe you can reserve judgment on that.
That's true, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
In an hour's time, yeah.
I mean, that's great. You've actually managed to answer both our core questions in one answer, which I think is pretty good. So our second question is, what do you do when you're not inventing inventions? But, well, there you go. Well,
but that's not what you do now, is it? Because you...
Oh, so at the moment, actually, yeah, this might have some bearing. At the moment, I'm writing a book about imagination.
Oh, hello.
And the role of imagination in our culture and why we need to be more imaginative at a time that demands us to be most imaginative. maybe collectively we're not as imaginative as we could be. So I'm writing a book about that. So this show is fits beautifully into that.
I wasn't going to, you know, point any fingers in our own direction, but
you know, it's where you create a space where people can explore and ask what if questions. It's great, you know.
Quite right too.
So anyway,
that's what the shed's for.
Yes.
It's the what if shed.
It's the what if shed.
Or it's the very good studio. It's got a variety of names.
Yeah. Everyone should have a what if shed.
Because the what if shed also sounds a bit like there might be some silly things going on there. Oh, come on. Come in. What if? This is the what if shed. which is not what we're trying to portray.
What if?
It's a very good network.
What if you just took off your clothes?
How would that be?
I don't know. Let's find out. I'll go first.
Yeah.
Delightful. Well, I guess we should get on to the inventions, really.
Yeah. So.
Indeedy. Jingle, 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 jingle.
So, let's go straight into that first invention.
My first invention is called CatNav.
Oh, we like cat-based
CatNav.
Ideas.
Yeah, so as somebody who does a lot of work with different communities around the place around the idea of growing food in cities,
right.
It's a big thing about how do you grow food in cities, and many, many people are doing that all over the place. One of the big problems looking out the window that you can see there as to why growing food in back gardens is so tricky is because of cats.
We have about four or five that pass through on an hourly basis.
Because as soon as you dig up any soil to grow things in come all the cats thinking, that's our toilet. And cat shit is really horrible, toxic stuff. It kills all the plants. So that's number one problem of growing food in cities. The other problem is how you water your plants. When do you water them? Do you water them in the morning? Do you water them in the evening? Maybe they'd like a bit of water all day during the day. You can't do that. So CatNav, TM in little letters at the top, solves both of those two problems at once, you see. Because what it does is it's like a watering system that you install in your beds, which is able to, via some mechanism that I haven't thought of yet.
We'll come back to that.
But I think I know how you could do it. It basically builds like a marauder's map of all the cats in the neighbourhood. And then whenever a cat comes within about 10 metres of the beds, it activates the watering system, which is a high-pressure watering system. So it goes, and the cats go, fuck, and the cats run away. Your plants get watered, and your plants grow unimpeded by cat shit. And you see, I think the way that you could do it is now dogs are all supposed to be microchipped. So in theory, you could use that to build your marauder's map. So I think if you bought in a thing where you said cats are a public health hazard because they shit everywhere, so they have to just have a little thing, or like a little just thing on their collar.
Yeah, sure.
And that allows you to build your marauder's map of cats. And then that's how you build your watering system.
And to be honest, you could Batman this situation. You could treat it like you introduce the tracers in the sense of, you know, keep an eye on your pet, don't lose your cat, because cats do like to wander off. There's a cat who insists it lives with us, even though it definitely doesn't. And I think its owners lose it fairly regularly. So that's your selling point. But then, yeah, you just data mine that. You take that that information that's out there and you just sort of hack into it, Batman style, as I say.
Although somebody did point out to me that if this really took off, that cats would become so profoundly traumatised by every time they needed a shit, they got sprayed with high-pressure water. So the cat population would start to sort of decline as a result.
Yeah.
But then what you would see would be a massive flowering of birds, of bird populations through cities, you know. So it would have many, many benefits, possibly illegal.
I mean, on another podcast I used to do, that my friend did come up with an invention because he's a ranger who works in conservation and variety, things like that. He was also not a big cat fan for that reason. His idea was simply a cat flap, which is actually just a blender. So I think you've taken a more sensitive approach.
More sensitive. Humane than that, I think. Because if you go to Los Angeles or somewhere and you're just walking along the streets and there's all these lush green lawns, every now and then they just go... And you get this high-pressure thing. So it's like that. If you imagine that, but synced to the presence of a nearby cat.
What would we do about strays?
Oh, what difference does it make if they're strays?
Well, because there's no one to chip them. But I'm thinking, instead of the chipping system, which we could also have that in there just because, you know, just do it for the cats. But but what if you had something that would, like, somehow just sense cats? Is that an option? Like
in
I'm
some
sure,
other way.
They, I'm see, sure like they either have like some sort of a catty aroma or something.
When he introduced the concept, that was the only sort of technical issue. He then quickly solved it. You sort of like reversed that back solving.
To it. I know, well, I just think there's quite a lot of strays, especially in cities. They've got massive issues with lots of stray cats.
I mean, there is a fair point that we have there. There are other animals. I wonder, do foxes do have a similar similar issue? There obviously are lots of them around, and they probably do like to have a route around in the air.
They probably do, yeah.
So, maybe you could have sensors that were at a certain level, ones that were slightly higher. If the things didn't get into that higher sensor level, but they did get in the bottom one, then they would get
sprayed.
So
just short things get sprayed.
Maybe short things get sprayed. So babies.
And that short things get sprayed.
maybe it's just like sort of a heat thermal imaging system. Mm. So any mammal.
Yeah. Just any creature.
And obviously if you want to go out and do the gardening, you just turn it off.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, that could work.
Yeah. I mean, in this case, we could just talk motion sensor in this case, but the problem then would probably be an excessive amount of watering.
Well, then it would also treble as a burglar alarm system if anybody chose to break into your house through the back door.
Yeah, if they wanted to cross the veg plot, they'd be straight out of luck.
See, so it could also, when we launch CatNav, it could have a thing as approved by the British Federation of Policing as a crime deterrent thing as well, you see.
Though I think it or would helps. Be quite a quick turnaround for the burglars to just realise that maybe don't walk across the veg plot. Just after a few weeks that would get out. I'm sure they tweet to each other.
Yeah, but what we're talking about here is a system where in a few years all garden space is full of people growing food, you see.
I see. Mm. So all available access
all
to
available
the house.
All available access
would
to the house
mean,
will be full of lettuce.
Would that mean that all non-vegetable areas then became sort of poop ghettos where all the cats went? Because they need to go somewhere. So if they can't go in the vegetable beds, are they all going to gravitate to like the
they
few
would need
places
to be designated cat zones.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, some would say there's a thing called a litter tray. It might mean that becomes a compulsory part of having a cat, maybe which does de-incentivize getting a cat because litter trays are terrible.
Well, frankly, de-incentivizing getting a cat is a noble purpose.
It's a fortunate side, but it's like when they do the various what's that? I can't think of a single example now. Let's forget that. Yeah, that thing where you set something up with one aim, but realistically you've got a second aim, and you know that's actually going to get the aim done more. This is obviously like to help people grow and avoid the cat issue, but if you could just stop people getting cats in the long run, then that's sort of a long term goal, isn't it?
It's a long term. It's not as abrupt as your cat flap. Cat mince.
You don't. That was it. You don't ban cigarettes. You just tax them heavily.
Exactly.
And then gradually they. Head out of society.
So you could think of it as CatNav, or you could think of it as a cat tax.
Exactly.
You could just tax cats.
They don't have any income. It would be a waste of time.
Well, they'd all go to jail and then they would die.
Yeah. Debtor's prison full of cats.
But I guess the vegetables would be safe.
Vegetables would be safe, yeah. Because, you know, come the apocalypse, you don't want to be eating cats. You would rather be eating fresh vegetables, you see. Yeah.
It's possible that what we'd end up doing, cats are really bloody minded animals. I mean, it's quite possible that what the cats would just do is form a complete love of water and simply to sort of get around, because they can see what you're doing. They're like, dude, come on, I understand. I know I pissed you off, that's kind of my job. I love it. Oh, it's so nice. Oh, playing in the sprinkler. You know.
Or they could evolve gills.
Or they could just form together in packs and just go and just savage the whole system. And just
claw the pipes.
Just claw the pipes, yeah.
They have inbuilt blades. They are natural saboteurs.
Yeah, they are. And I think they would find a common... I mean, of course cats hate each other. But I think if we started spraying them, they would then hate us more.
This sounds like an amazing film. The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Exactly.
They become an allegiance.
Maybe cats of the world unite. You have nothing to lose but your places to shit.
Maybe it's my next children's book.
Yeah, nothing to lose but your temporary dryness. You'll get it back. It's fine.
Yeah, CatNav is a great name for a children's book as well, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, I was thinking something like Where to Shit Now.
Also an excellent name.
Although possibly not quite right on the kiddies bookshelf.
No,
Everybody Poops was very popular.
Everyone Poops.
Go the Fuck to Sleep. Everyone really liked that book. Granted, I don't think that was aimed at children. So, should we move on to the second idea? Mm.
So my second idea is called the Jesus and Mary tune.
Oh, I do like a pie.
Okay, so the Jesus Mary tune. So tune it as spelt in C-H-O-O-N, Jesus Mary tune. Okay? Yeah. So I, in the 1980s, before all you fresh-faced, lovely young people were even existed probably, there was a band called the Jesus and Mary Chain who sounded a bit like this. So they would write these very beautiful three-chord pop songs and then swathe them in feedback so you could barely hear the song underneath, which I really loved. I thought they were fantastic. See? So I started to think about how would it be if you had like an extension to something like Spotify or one of those sort of things where you could play a song that you like, but you could press the Jesus and Mary tune button and it would swathe that song in feedback as if you were listening to Jesus and Mary Chain. See, so for the benefit of the programme, I mocked one of these up. Okay, so
yes, please.
It starts with a song you might recognise and then we switch on the Jesus and Mary tune after a few seconds. You see, now to my ears, that adds a certain something.
It definitely adds a certain something.
And I did do one other one as well.
Definitely.
See, isn't that better?
So,
see, that is infinitely improved to my ears. So you could, so it would be a thing where you could listen to anything on Spotify, and you press the Jesus Mary tune button, and it swathes it in horrible noise.
Okay.
and it got me thinking that actually it's like Instagram where you upload your photos and then you apply different filters to them, so you can make it look like a 70s Polaroid or whatever. Yes. With this, you can put any song that you want to listen to on Spotify through a filter. So you could make it sound a bit more 60s.
Yep.
It could read the BPM of the track and put something else underneath.
Chuck a disco beat behind
it. You could chuck a disco beat behind it. You could also just have like a Biggie Smalls one where in the background he just goes, uh-huh, yeah, you know it, one, two,
just
all the way through.
A hype man.
Like in the background all the way through, you see? So it's like filters for music.
I mean, the initial one, my first question was, what's the target market? Because, it was like, is there a Beyonce fan who's like really into sort of hardcore noise, heart music?
It's a niche.
It's a niche. It's definitely a niche. But you see, your follow up with the further filters, I just want this to exist. I definitely want the hype man to exist. All it does is recognize the gaps where there isn't anyone talking and just chuck in a bit of hype.
Hype,
that's right.
Yeah, you know it.
Exactly.
And people who are into listening to vinyl and they want to have the newer songs but want a bit more of that kind of old school fuzz to them.
Yeah,
you could definitely have a thing where you just put a clickety clackety scratchy noises on top to make it sound like a record.
And whenever you start it would do the putting down the
That would be the most hipster app that had ever existed. It takes your iTunes library and makes it sound like you're listening to vinyl.
Yeah,
amazing.
But you could also have a thing where you can make it sound like they're playing in different places. So you could listen to Beyonce as though she was playing in a public toilet somewhere, or on a train. You could choose your train station.
Mm.
What would Beyonce sound like doing that song?
You could probably,
on Temple Mead Station.
You could have live mics as well. You could actually get literally the sound of what is currently happening in Temple Mead Station.
How different would that song sound on Temple Mead Station or on Sheffield Station?
Which is your preferred station
Which
for Beyonce?
Your station for Beyonce to play at?
Yeah, or just your nan's kitchen or something.
Or a football match.
I've always been curious. And then you could, and then of course you could play that to people who weren't aware of the app, and they'd be like, "Wow, I didn't know she did a gig at Bristol Temple Meads." I can tell from listening that's Bristol Temple Meads.
Exactly.
I recognise the announcements.
And then I guess she could listen to that, and it would help her decide which would be the best station for her next live appearance.
Exactly. So the ways that you could monetize this app are just enormous.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'd go and see Beyonce if she was playing in a stadium. If she was playing in Bristol train station.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd be there.
An experience.
Though it's worth saying that this inevitably is going, because unless it was what it realistically would be the sound of people listening to Beyonce, which is generally just some cheering and singing along.
Yeah, but it's all about the acoustics.
Exactly. What we're talking about realistically here is bad acoustics and everyone's carrying on with their business.
And trains coming and going.
Yeah.
Like if she wasn't her, she was just like a busker.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the potential for it is just huge.
I mean, the remix culture like would just be kind of somewhat slapped on its ass because it'd be like, well, I just wanted a remix of it, so I pressed this filter, and there it was. I've got the drum and bass remix. It's a filter.
Yeah. Exactly. It would make drum and bass DJs redundant overnight. The whole remixing industry would be absolutely destroyed.
Do you have a similar relationship with this industry as you do with cats? Do you also kind of want to gradually just phase them out?
I think he's probably had more connection with cats than the drum and bass remix industry over the years.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know. I mean, I know his sons.
Well, this is true.
There's something to learn to that.
Their connection has been waking him up at 4 a.m.
What the hell is that? It sounds like a washing machine being kicked down the stairs full of spanners.
That could be a filter too.
Exactly.
It could, see. There's so much you could do with it. You could be listening to Frank Sinatra, and in the background you could have your Biggie Smalls plug in over the top, whatever. And it's in an airport lounge.
Multiple filters.
You could just stack them on.
I certainly think it's certainly a piece of piss to stick a disco beat behind that. I mean, like, that was a record that me and my sister used to spend a lot of time listening to as children, was a thing called Hooked on Classics.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty amazing. That was apparently a huge hit for people who didn't like music. It was literally just, free music, so classical music, where they stuck a fourth-to-floor disco beat behind every track. That was it. So it was just, that's it,
made millions of pounds out of it.
I mean, a genius.
Like I will out of exactly. Jesus and Mary tune.
It's incredibly clever because, it was all basically free and a disco beat is not hard to apply.
No. Nor is a horrible squalling noise wall of feedback.
I'm just lost in this world now. I'm just imagining all the varieties of things and really enjoying it.
You see, I don't like Spotify myself, but this could lure me over. If I could listen to Beyonce and make it sound like the Velvet Underground playing in the basement somewhere.
Do you get a cut? Does the person who has this app, of course, get a cut of the admittedly tiny royalties for the Spotify play in
Absolutely.
That case?
Absolutely.
It's only fair, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. This is my hard work here.
It's actually possible that if you just sold the app, if it was actually an upfront cost rather than a royalties thing, you might make more money through Spotify than the artists do. Especially pretty likely.
I wonder if you can add plugins to Spotify so you could the app as you could, the app as one thing, and then you'd run Spotify through the app.
Yes. Well,
so that'd be the way.
You can have plugins on Spotify. There's like radio plugins and stuff, so this is entirely achievable.
Yeah.
Whether artists would necessarily allow their music to be completely destroyed by an app.
They wouldn't have a choice.
I guess, again, Spotify.
They don't have much say, would it? I mean,
Spotify give a fuck, do they?
Like their songs get played on the radio and they play jingles over the top of them.
That's true, people just chat over them.
Their music gets massacred, and obviously not quite to that extent.
Not to that extent, but Steve Wright will talk over the last 50% of a song routinely on radio too. Every time he plays a song, he's like, I'm basically going to talk over everything until the person starts singing, and then probably the last half as well.
Because I'm so much more interesting than this record.
He likes to chuck in facts.
Yeah.
Like his lovely Top Pops 2 situation. Here's a fact. Don't look at the artist, read my fact. Anyway, there's a bit of personal gripe. You haven't got any more questions?
No, I think it would work.
It's quite thorough.
I reckon let's have it.
Yeah. Okay, done, sold.
Do you want to tell us about your third idea?
My third and final, rather than my previous two, which frankly could go to the market tomorrow and could be on Dragon's Den next week, really.
Hey, don't mention that here.
Dragon's what?
This third one is kind of in a beta stage, which could really benefit, I think, from you creative types' input into it. So it's called Empathy Twister.
Okay.
So it's the idea. So we currently live in a time where people are more and more sort of isolated from each other, and more living in their own political bubbles, and their social media feeds just reinforce their own particular political views. So we very rarely sit and have a conversation with somebody from a very, very different political perspective to us. And when they do, they get pretty narky fairly quickly because we've lost that ability to sort of understand each other and communicate with each other.
Yeah, you hear somebody say one thing, it triggers you, and you tell them they're an idiot.
Like, I voted Leave, for example.
That's it. That's enough, usually.
That's enough to set me off. So the idea of Empathy Twister is when you play Twister on a Twister board, you have blue, red, yellow and green circles. So the idea is that you play Twister with a conservative a Labour voter, a Liberal Democrat, and a Green voter.
Oh, good grief.
And the idea is that then every time you put your hand onto one of the circles that's not yours, you have to argue a policy or something from their point of view.
Yep.
So it's about building empathy. So you put yourself in that person's shoes. Yeah. So if I'm playing and I put my hand on blue, then I have to argue the case as to why privatising the NHS would be a really great idea. So while I'm sort of physically intertwined with the person who actually holds that view,
a
ludicrous kind of position. So the silliness of it takes that sort of adversarial narky edge out of it. You're having a bit of a giggle and you're playing the game, but then you have to say, well, I think privatising the NHS would be a really great idea because we could have a McDonald's in every we already do. Whatever, you know. So you have to make that argument, and then they would then spin the thing and they would put the hand on green. So the Conservative person would have to argue for a universal basic income and against more nuclear power stations. So it's a way of, it's like a plug-in to an existing game where you can still play it, but you have these little cards as well with the questions. So you play Twister and you become more empathic.
You could even, I mean, for a start, the tagline writes itself, you know, empathy twister, take a new position. Which I like.
That's very good.
Yeah, it's
good.
Right there.
It's good.
But, I like that.
I mean, that was already in the idea. I just saw it. That was a given. but if you could even make the point where it's beyond a card, it could be, again, app. Basically, everything's an app now. We've realised this during this show for only like 6 episodes. Everything's a freaking app. But it being an app means that, of course, it could be tied into current affairs. So it really is like the current topics that are on your mind, you know, things that are going on right that moment.
You could be, I think Amber Rudd was really great because...
That's the only issue, of course, is your ability to make the argument might be... I mean, if I was to play with my Conservative friend and it went to like sort of... you know, housing should be built by the private sector, I would end up just saying it in a sarcastic voice because it's really great and it's so nice that people can't afford to live in this country. And you know, that's the only issue. It would require...
Yeah.
But then if you wanted to be good at the game, I guess that might incentivize you to get a few facts going in, like to do a bit of reading, you know.
Yeah, well, I think maybe if you did have an app that could tell you your standpoint, because I feel like quite a lot of people wouldn't know if it was just like, you know, what is the Lib Dems policy on immigration? Then people would be like, well, I'm not sure. I reckon it's probably...
Or just what's the Lib Dems policy on insert name here and anything? And then be like, oh.
Well, yeah, fine. Okay, that is a fair point, yeah.
They want to stay,
yeah.
That's all I know.
Yeah, I know that bit.
It's that base 8, really, isn't it, at the moment, I think.
So but then it could pop up and say, this is your standpoint. Please argue for it. And then you would have to say.
That's true. The app helps you there. It's like, this is the viewpoint. So this is the topic. This is the viewpoint. Off you go.
It could just be that you just have black and white or something and you play Brexit Twister. So you have Leave and Remain and you have to kind of make those cases to each other.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the great thing about the customizable nature of the game. It's like two of the colours become one side, two become the other.
Yeah.
That can work too. You can. This goes in numerous directions. I think, obviously, you can't walk away from the perfect beauty of the four colours. That's just too... You can't be lost. That's too nice. It just makes me happy.
Well, I quite like that Brexit Twister is just bleak.
I'm totally polarised.
I think that works quite well.
Everybody loses.
Yeah, everybody loses. Yeah.
Brexit Twister, everybody loses.
At the end, the board just disintegrates.
Floats away to two pieces.
That's true. You just set fire the board partway through and you have to just sort of move gradually into the remaining corner and then you just gone.
There's a great thing called the Empathy Project where you stay out. The whole idea of, you know, walking in somebody else's shoes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you put on this little headset and you listen to somebody else's story and you go for a walk. So that was kind of where I started.
How could you
get people to speak as though they were other people?
I think it's really
nice, their opinions.
The idea of being pushed to try and make the argument. And I think if you could make it, certainly, I'm playing this in my mind with a friend of mine who is my only sort of right-wing leaning friend, really. Conservative voting, Theresa May's a bit of a muppet, but she's pretty good fundamentally. David Cameron was great, that kind of guy. Did vote Remain, so at least we haven't killed each other. But I think both of us have, and certainly him, have such a strong incentive to win a game that we would try our frickin' best to argue. So I think I could get him to actually make really strong arguments in my favour, you know, based in things I believe in, if there was a potential to win a game. So if you could make that...
Interesting.
If you could sort of make it have points, if you see what I mean. Like, so that when you've, you know, to actually, you can, like, I don't know how quite how to do this, but that would give someone the incentive to try hard rather than say what I'd end up saying, which is...
Do you think there's a chance he might actually start to believe it as well?
Well, that's it.
He was saying it with enough conviction that he might...
If you did some research going into the game and you were like, oh, I didn't realise that.
Wait, I've never actually looked into this very closely.
Maybe I've been wrong all these years.
Yes.
See, the mental picture I had was imagining in a year or so once Empathy Twister was developed to the stage where it was ready to go to market, was in the ballroom at the Barrel House having an Empathy Twister night where you would invite the Conservative Club and the local Labour people, and you would have the room full of Twister mats and all these people of different political leanings all intertwined with each other having earnest conversations from each other's perspective. I think it could be an absolute winner.
I hadn't quite visualised the lovely image of earnest conversations mid-twist, which now makes it even more glorious.
Yeah.
While sort of slightly distorted physically, having trying to kind of find... Well, you know, actually,
now you mention it. Yeah. If you take your arse out of my face, I could actually explain this to you.
Although possibly in Totnes, you might have slightly more of the Green and Labour people.
You could
reach
open
out
it
into
up.
into the villages.
An invited audience, yes.
Then you'd have way more Conservatives. It would swing in.
You try and make it in the same manner as a BBC political programme. You have that, like, well, you invite there's a quota. There's a quota for the invite list, you know. You have to have achieved a certain amount of...
You have the Dillman standing outside the ballast. No, no more Tories! We're full of Tories!
One in, one out, mate.
The
Dems, sorry.
The Lib Dems. Yeah, you're all right. You can come in. Coming in here with those political views.
I think tourists to Totnes would be confused. If they didn't know this was going on and they were visiting Totnes and they just saw people being banned from coming in the Barrow House based on their political views... I should probably make it known more widely.
I think
what's going
on lefty here. I didn't realise. Yeah,
exactly.
It could be like the sort of new sort of Totnes version of the gladiators. You know, people sort of, you could sell tickets around the edge to watch all these people intertwined with each other debating.
I mean, I really, really want this to happen. Incidentally, the Barrel House is the place that both me and Rowan work. It's the sort of central venue in Totnes. I want this to happen. People keep pitching these ideas around here for, like, let's get together and have conversations, let's try and break down boundaries. But it's hard to get people to do that because they don't really want to. So if you can kind of gamify it, which is the current trend, isn't it?
Yeah.
People, I'd go for a gamified version of having a chat with someone, particularly seeing as you wouldn't just be saying you're wrong to somebody over and over again. You'd be doing exactly the opposite.
You could also do religious Empathy Twister.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you could have Muslim, Christian, Buddhist, whatever.
I feel your son could do with this as a game. I feel like he could...
I think he could, yeah. There would need to be an atheist thing. But it'd be interesting for you to be intertwined with a Christian and a Muslim and a Buddhist, arguing their point of view.
I feel like
in a knot.
See, I can now see an issue within the game. If you have complete, very, very firm beliefs, it could be hard. I mean, the thing is there is, I feel like, two spectrums to, you know, any sort of political argument that you can, you know, within a conservative argument, I can usually find a point where I could be like, okay, well, that bit is correct, and that's where you've got to where you are.
Oh, no, that's the point. You've got to basically say what you don't believe in this instance. You've got to. That's the game.
Yeah, there is like a space for empathy there. Whereas if someone's like, we're talking about Christianity, it's like, well, no, that's just bullshit.
And this is why we need Empathy Twister.
That's why we need a guy on the door as well. Not coming in here with radical secularism.
Exactly. There'd be like the Richard Dawkins test. You'd be like, sort of, what do you think of this book? Oh, he's tremendous. No, I'm sorry, you can't come in.
You can't come in. But you could do it for all kinds of things. You could do it for different... They could do it at the Oxford Farming Conference with sort of organic people and GM people. Get them all intertwined on the mats.
Or you could have like vegetarian, vegan, carnivore, you know, Twister.
Camera versus keg. I'd definitely go for that.
Okay, we'll host that first. That's our little entry one.
Yeah.
Though to be fair, I think actually if any of them were going to result in violence, it's that one.
Oh. Also, I'm not sure that... I mean, most of the camera members, I'm not sure how flexible they are.
In any sense.
Just like sense, a pile of bellies.
Spare ideas. If you got them, then we'll have them. Spare ideas. We'll take them apart and put them back together again.
Well, I think we should probably draw it to a close now. Actually, most realistically, because me and Rowan have to go to work.
And me.
And, yeah. And well, and we all have to go to work.
We all have work to do, Ben. Exactly. We all have work to do. Yeah. Exactly.
I should probably place an empathy twister on your lifestyles.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's just say thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure. Thank you. That was fun.
And for officially probably making the most realistic invention so far.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah. I think a bar has been set now for realism.
I'm off down the patent office.
Well, this is the beautiful thing about this show. We've said it before. I believe by simply putting this show out in the world, that's officially copyrighted those ideas with you because you've said them. Yep. It's on the record. There's a date stamp. Done.
But don't you say at the start of the show that anyone's welcome to just steal any of the ideas?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. That's in the jingle, isn't it?
It's in the jingle. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you need to add like a caveat or something to that.
Just be like, absolutely not, you can't have them.
Actually, they're now copyrighted.
I'll put that in like 20 seconds after the end of the episode so it doesn't ruin the fun of the joke, but it's still technically in there.
Yeah.
It's like those terms and conditions you don't read.
Just said really on adverts and on radio where they say, terms and conditions may apply, you might get your house taken away and you might lose both your legs.
Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure, thank you, that was good.
If you've enjoyed listening to the show, please do like and subscribe and all those things. Rate and review, all that good stuff you're always told to do at the end of podcasts. We also have other shows from the Very Good Network. One about beer.
Which is Three Boys and Three Beers.
Yeah, you see, you told me in a previous episode of Three Boys, Three Beers that I never shout out that show on other shows.
You don't.
Just did it.
Yeah, you did.
That's well your done. Benefit.
Yeah.
We also have one called You're Nearly Dead, where we write a piece each week. It's all about threes. Three pieces, three boys. Yeah, it's always threes. And critique each other's. Effectively tell each other we're shit at writing in a sort of friendly way. We've known each other long enough to do that.
It's a good show.
It's mainly about trying to get people to be creative and, you know, sort of follow their, I don't want to say the word bliss, let's say.
No, don't say that.
Let's not say that.
Passion.
No, not even that. Just write something. Christ, you're going to die soon. That's why it's called that. That's why it's called You're Only Dead.
Stop thinking.
Stop thinking. Start writing.
Write it down.
Exactly. Anyway, do you want to sing us out, Sarah?
I don't think anybody wants me to sing.
Metaphorically or literally.
Us out.
Yeah, you can figuratively.
How do you metaphorically sing? How is that?
Talk.
How does that happen? Like this?
Yeah.
Like talk we're doing
out,
anyway.
Talk us out. No, that's the opposite of talking.
Oh, she was metaphorically talking.
Yeah, yeah. You see, he got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
He got it.
Good.
Goodbye, everyone.
Thanks.
Bye.
Cheerio.
Bye-bye.
That was a Very Good podcast from verygood.org.uk.